invoice receipt date instead of the date on the invoice to start the discount period. This greatly increases the time available to take the discounts. Based on our recommendation, Metro revises purchasing terms to use the invoice receipt dates to start the discount period. We believe that this action will significantly increase the amount of discounts that can be taken. On the second audit, as part of our oversight of the Metro Orange Line contract, we reviewed change order number 25, which was issued in November 2003. Both the contractor and MTA agreed that there was a cost savings associated with the change order. However, we found that the contractor's invoice through April 2005 did not include a credit for this change, although the work had been completed. After we discussed this matter with Metro staff, a letter was promptly issued advising the contractor to provide a credit for the change order on the next invoice. The May 2005 invoice included a $203,000 credit for the change order. The final audit involved our review of miscellaneous expenses. We found that MTA was paying employees the full per diem allowance for partial days of travel, which are the first and last travel days. The existing travel policy did not provide guidance in this area. Management agreed with our finding and initiated action to revise the travel policy. This concludes our presentation. We're open to any questions.
Okay, any questions? Thank you very much. Ms. Burke moves. Ms. Molina seconds. We'll receive and file this item. I understand that Mr. Fasan is here. I tried to figure out why, and then I saw item 35. We could take that out of order so that he can go back on his business. I'm assuming you're here not as an officious intermeddler, but as a... as a proponent.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. A proponent without a vote, but more than interested to see this move along.
Okay, so item 35, take out of order.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is a memorandum of understanding between the MTA and the Blue Line Construction Authority. All it really does is set forth the timing for the board to consider, both boards of both agencies to consider a master cooperative agreement between the agencies dealing with any extension of the Gold Line in the San Gabriel Valley area. The commitment is simply to for the boards to consider a master cooperative agreement at the meeting at least 30 days after the final EIR is approved. It really doesn't legally commit the board to anything, but it's just an expression of good faith between the agencies.
What are the next steps in the process?
First step would be for the Gold Line Authority to, I guess that's what their name is, to get the EIR approved, the environmental documents approved for their extension. Once that is done and that document is finalized, then we would finalize a master cooperative agreement for the agencies to sign. The master cooperative agreement has basically two parts to it, essentially. One is it says which agency is going to pay for any changes to the baseline. So we would have to agree with them to a baseline design. And then if we were to request a change from that at a later date, we would be obligated to pay for that change. If they were to make a change from that baseline design, they'd have to get our approval, but they would be obligated to make that change. And the other thing it does is it provides a mechanism for that agency to pay us for the time of our employees working with them to approve documents and whatever. Those are essentially what the Master Cooperative Agreement does.
Any questions?
Move it.
It's been moved by Ms. Molina, seconded by Mr. Katz, and such will be the order to approve this item. Item 31.
Chairman and members, I'm Michael Turner with MTA Government Relations.
SB 801 is a measure by Senator Smidian that, when originally drafted, was aimed at trying to provide tax relief for small businesses. Originally, the bill was going to allow small businesses to both file their estimated payments and their tax returns on an annual basis instead of a quarterly basis. Under that scenario, we would have been facing a potential delay in receipt of about $40 million based on our local sales tax. The bill has been amended to allow the businesses to file their tax returns on a quarterly basis, but still make the quarterly payments. And then it's also been reduced to require a smaller number of businesses to be eligible to apply for the program. So the impact at this point appears to be a lot less than the $40 million. We wanted to recommend an opposed position as it stands right now because the bill still has, there's still some administrative things with the Board of Equalization that have to be worked out. And we want to make sure the language as far as the amendments that they're moving right now are still sufficient to protect the funding flow to the agency. If those things are worked out, we would remove our opposition to the bill.
Couldn't we say that instead, though, Michael?
Yes.
I mean, instead of continuing to oppose it, I mean, couldn't we say we oppose?
We could say oppose unless amended.
Something that is more positive than.
Yeah.
Or even support if amended. I mean, because
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, because I think that's what supervised support if amended. Because the number, on one hand, we're looking at the cash flow, the impact on the agency. The beneficiary of this bill, there are going to be a lot of vendors of ours and subcontractors of ours that I think, you know, in terms of helping small businesses and maybe weeby businesses, we probably want to be doing.
In addition to that, I think what the two former legislators are sharing with you is a better way to proceed. It's saying the.
I don't disagree at all.
Why don't we say support if amended?
Yes.
Something like that.
Okay. Any questions? With that caveat, Ms. Molina moves and Mr. Katz seconds to approve this item. Item 32. Have staff report, yes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Board Directors. My name is Linda Wright. I'm the Deputy Executive Officer for Diversity and Economic Opportunity. And we're here today to ask approval of a 15% small business enterprise goal for the fiscal year 2006 and 2007. Staff is also asking approval for a biannual review for this program. The SBE program is a program unique to MTA. This program is in response to Proposition 209, which was passed in 1997. That proposition said it's
1998.
Illegal. I'm sorry?
1998.
Okay.
It's passed in 98.
Okay. That proposition stated that it is illegal to, in contracting education and employment, to base those decisions on race or gender. Our SBE program is a response to Prop 209 because it is race and gender neutral, and it is for our local and state funding on our negotiated procurements only. This program has a for SBEs that are certified, it has a personal net worth of $250,000. This program, as I said, is an MTA program. It is not mandated by the state or the federal government. And what we do to determine the level of the goal is to determine historical contracting and also to evaluate the number of contracts proposed for the period that we're asking for approval. Happy to answer any questions.
Move the item.
Before, I have a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. Why so, since it is voluntary, why so low?
It's not a voluntary program because we do set goals, but it is a program unique to MTA only. It's not one that is adopted by any other office. And the reason that number is what it is because we have taken a look at what the activity is that we are proposing to contract in a fiscal year. And we also, for this program, go back and look at historical data to see what we have obtained in the future. We set the goal at 15%, but we certainly hope, and we work toward exceeding that goal always.
What would prevent, I mean, so based on what we've done in the past, before we had a program like this, right?
Well, we had an MWBE program prior to the SBE program, but that one was outlawed because of Prop 209.
Right.
And that's where we did set goals. We have that program on the books now, and it is for our bids for state and local funds. There are no goals set, but it is a voluntary program, but we certainly...
So that's the voluntary program.
Yes. But we certainly encourage anyone who contracts with us that we expect them to be an equal employment opportunity employer and to include small and minority businesses, even though there are no goals and there is no enforcement. But that is on bids for state and local. This SBE program is for negotiated procurements, state and local.
So the bids are completely voluntary, but negotiated, we're putting a 15% goal.
Well, we will analyze the procurement, and we will set a goal based on what the opportunities that that procurement will render. We are recommending a 15% overall goal, but if we have a contract and we can identify small business participation at 30%, then it will have a 30% goal. This is our overall goal based on the aggregate amount of contracting that we're expecting to do.
You know, I guess my biggest issue, and I know that this is just a unique program, and so we're moving in the right direction. We're living in a city where 70% of the people of the city are of color. I mean, the idea that you have a 15% goal just doesn't I don't understand it. It seems low to me, even if it is, I guess not voluntary, but a goal. Mm-hmm. You know, just it doesn't seem like we're reaching here.
This program does require firms to be certified to be counted against our goals. So we do outreach and we do provide assistance with certification to increase our numbers of those that would be eligible to count against the goal. So while there may be a vast number of contractors in our territory, it is only those that are certified that we can count against this goal.
And the SB program is a growing program. We're anticipating that there will be more contracting. We're looking at the trend now and how projects are being funded. Majority of the projects that offer subcontracting opportunities or opportunities for small business were historically under the federal program. We're seeing now that many of those projects are now being funded with state and local funds. So we're anticipating an increase of more opportunities on the SBE side under negotiated procurements. As Linda mentioned, currently Prop 209 prohibits preference in public bidding, and that's why the SBE program currently does not apply to our state and local bids. So right now we're working with the negotiated contract side, and as we see a transition in how projects are funded, more of the state and local funding projects that we see now are offering more opportunities. But I think the highest number of opportunities are still on the bid side, of which, of course, those are state and local funded and currently under the voluntary MWBE program. So the 15%...
In the voluntary WBE or MBE-WBE program, what's the percentage of, you know, minorities and women that are getting contracts?
The percentage is very low because it is voluntary, although in our contract language we do have encouragement language that we encourage. Average, I would say maybe 2% on a given contract where we would establish a voluntary level of participation. So it's very low. We are unable to track MWBE participation. It is illegal for us to track it because it's voluntary. But based on what we've seen, the average is about 2%, 3% of voluntary participation overall of state and local bid projects that we have.
What about small business and local business?
We have, I think in our database, we have 247 certified small business firms that is in LA County. We have what we look at is our statistical market area, of five counties, which include LA, Riverside, San Bernardino, Ventura, and Orange County. And that totals, 361 certified firms. And those are firms that are certified with our agency as small business. It may not include all small businesses out there, but they are not certified with our agency currently. And unfortunately, in order to count them and to use those numbers to calculate our annual goal, they have to be certified. So that's where the outreach come in encouraging firms, small businesses that are out there to get certified. So that they can participate in the program.
How many small businesses are we certifying in a year?
We do an average of 30 a year on our SBE side. And one of the things that we've done as well, in 1999, the Department of Transportation mandated that each state create a certified, unified certification program. And MTA has taken a lead in that because we want to be represented there because we want to be a part of the process that will help to increase the number of available firms. We work very closely with other transit agencies in our market area too, to identify if a firm comes to us and they want to be certified as a DBE, we will process that application to certify them for as many categories as they are eligible so that we can capture them on the SBE side, on the DBE side, or either the MWBE, so that we will have an available pool of folks to notify about our contracting opportunities.
Any other questions?
Move the item.
Item's been moved by, I'm sorry, there's Leon Borja.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. We'll give him a minute.
Good morning, or good afternoon. My name is Borja Leon, and I'm a registered civil engineer with the state of California, and also a member and speaking in behalf of the Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers. The Society promotes and encourages small business, minority corporations or companies to engage in small business participation within the any agency, local, state, or even federal. Antonio Vigarriosa has been very advocate of, you know, being a supporter of small business since his days with Gloria Molina, and we embrace him for this effort, for all the efforts. You know, we would like to see a higher than 8% DBE goal. If we take a cross section within the LA County. In the city of LA, we would see definitely that the representation is low, and comparably with other agencies in California and even the nation. So I appreciate, you know, the board and Antonio for this, for the attention to this. And congratulations, Antonio, for your mayor committee.
Let me just say that before we move it, that pretty sad state of affairs. You know, I was in South Los Angeles yesterday, and everybody wants to know why there's no economic development in that community, and what are we doing to leverage our assets to create wealth and economic development. And what you're telling me is after Proposition 209, about 2% of our contracts are going to women and minorities, at least as I understood that. Roughly, we can't count it.
That's so on the MWBE side.
On the MWBE side, mm-hmm. And then we have this 15% on negotiated, but negotiated is a much smaller percentage of what we do. And so, I can only tell you that those numbers are rather shocking and cause me a great deal of consternation. And so, I'm gonna be looking at ways for us to invest in our communities. in a way that's more, that keeps, obviously respects the law, but that is creatively trying to leverage, you know, this public investment to, you know, a broader and more diverse pool of people. So with that, Ms. Molina's moved and Ms. Burke is seconded, and we'll approve this item. Item number 33.
Staff is here to seek approval of an 8% FTA DBE goal and also an 8% Federal Highway Administration DBE goal. Up until 2004, we were reporting our FHWA and our FTA goals together. They have since asked us to do separate goals. We have done our analysis according to approved methodologies of the FTA, and based on the level of contracting that is anticipated, based on our relevant market area and the number of available firms, we are asking 8% for our FTA and also 8% for our federal highway goal.
Any, again, my comments, you know, are as applicable here as the item before that. This is an issue that I think we're duty bound to explore just what we can do within the law to invest in small and local businesses here, especially in areas of the city and in communities that historically not participated in a way that I think makes us healthy. But having already stated that, are there any other questions here? Yes, Ms. Fasana?
On this one, I guess my question is, what is the impact of the agency of approving a higher goal? So you wanted to set it higher, like 15, 20, or whatever, instead of 8%. What would be the impact on the agency of setting a higher goal?
The way we get to the number that we're requesting approval for is based upon an approved methodology that is set forth by the FTA that we have to follow. We have to be able to defend that number, and we have to be able to report how we, you know, are asking for that number. One of the things that we certainly try to do, while we go forward with an 8% goal, we do outreach, we do communications with the small business community so that we can make them aware, come in and bid, because we certainly do welcome them as prime contractors. And also, we want to make sure that they, in turn, will let other small businesses know. We work very closely with our TBAC, which is our Transportation Business Advisory Committee.
Okay, where I want to go with this is, given the existence of 209 here and other factors in California, and given the demographics of the region, even acknowledging maybe basis on this methodology, couldn't you still set a higher goal? And wouldn't that still send a message out to the contracting community as well if there was a higher goal? And therefore, wouldn't that help the numbers maybe come in a little higher?
Again, this is an annual goal. We evaluate each contract to determine the opportunities for that contract. So the goals are set accordingly. So if there's a contract, again, that represents or could render 30% participation, we'll put that number for those who are responding to our opportunities. This is overall based on the level of contracting opportunities or contracting or budget that we have projected for a year.
So you're saying that you're limited by the, that you can't just pick a number, you're limited by
absolutely
data, right. And the data says that number should be 8%.
Right. The new final rule that the DLT issued on a DBE program in 1999, one of the major changes, and that was a result of several Supreme Court decisions, was that now the DBE program had to be what they call narrowly tailored, and it had to look at your specific geographic market, where are the contractors located, where you're doing, that you're generating business from. So it has to be within that narrowly tailored geographic area, of which we mentioned are the five counties for our agency, as well as we look at the budget, what is actually projected to be awarded in the upcoming fiscal year. And so it's tied to the geographic market as well as the actual dollars. And we have seen a decrease in the number of projects that are not only federally funded but that are going forward. There were many projects that were delayed and or deferred in for 06 that also impacted the number of contracts that are available that have opportunities for 06. And so you can set a higher goal, but again, many programs are being challenged now, and the Washington State Department DB program was recently challenged based on the annual goal. So it does have to be narrowly tailored, and it does have to reflect what your actual projected federal dollars are for the fiscal year.
Now, how much money is in our DB outreach? Because as I understood you in the item before, this part of this is like a chicken and egg thing. Part of what happens here, you got to certify, and you have a limited pool. You know, and expanding the pool helps you get more people, I assume. Is that correct? So how much do we have in our budget currently to do that outreach?
Our budget is very limited for the upcoming fiscal year this year. We did engage on quite an aggressive outreach program over the last 2 years, which has helped us to reconnect with the small business community, and I'm very happy to say that they are excited about doing business with us. There have been other things that we have done, too, to facilitate or either enhance our programs. We have in place now, thanks to Director Burke, a shared responsibility program. And this is a program where executive management, our strategic business units, we interface directly with them. We sit down, we analyze what their upcoming opportunities are. We set a goal on each one of our executive units. We report to you all, and we report to Mr. Snobel what those achievements are. And getting everyone involved again has helped us a lot. Thanks to Director Molina, we have a debarment ordinance that I am very happy to say we have successfully implemented and won our first case on sending a message to those who want to do business with us that we're serious about our small businesses and that we will insist that they are treated properly and that our contractors will comply with our DBE and SBE requirements. So there are other things in addition to outreach that we are planning to do to help people to know that we want their involvement, that we are about inclusion, and we will do a small business university, hopefully, in the coming year to help them to know how to do business with us by having those here actually train them on how to engage in our procurement process all the way through to how to respond to one of our audits so that they're comfortable in knowing that we will be supportive in wanting them to come and also being with them while they are under contract.
Now, if we were to increase our budget for DBE outreach, what would be the impact of, I mean, depending obviously how much, but
well, it would be an impact, of course, and it would certainly help because we would continue to do our interface with the associations that are out there that have the ability to communicate with large numbers of small businesses. Our TBAC, for instance, represents 14 organizations. These are our minority groups where we can get with them, we can do email blasts, they can share it with their memberships. We actually go out, and having, you know, the resources to do that couldn't do anything but help us to make sure that our numbers do increase.
Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none. Yes.
Yeah.
No, we have a form you can fill out on general comment.
Just do it under general comment.
You can do it under general comment. Okay, so Ms. Molina moves and Mr. Katz seconds approval of item 33.
Thank you.
Item 34.
Mr. Chairman, item 34 is a request for an MOU between the LA Metro and the Southern California Regional Rail Authority for right-of-way law enforcement services, an amount not to exceed $8.4 million over a five-year period of time. In 1992, the Los Angeles County Transportation Commission, as well as the other members of Metrolink, agreed that law enforcement aboard the trains would be provided by Metrolink. and that law enforcement on the right-of-ways that Metrolink operated on would be provided by the agencies that own those right-of-ways. Since 1995, the MTA has contracted with Metrolink to provide the security on the 138 miles of track miles of MTA-owned right-of-way in Los Angeles County. And that contract is coming up for renewal, the Memorandum of Understanding, and this is a request to provide a new Memorandum of Understanding for up to 5 years. For your information, 9.5 LASD deputies provide services on the right-of-way, and that the Metrolink is currently seeking additional agencies or other agencies to provide these services, and then later they might make a change in the provider. If that should occur, then we will review that change and determine if there is sufficient coverage for our right-of-ways and come back to the board with any changes.
Yes, Ms. Molina?
I'm not sure I understand it. The right-of-way, right now, we contract with, Metrolink contracts with us.
Yes.
To cover all areas, right? Or is it the other way around?
It's the other way around.
Okay. So we contract with them to cover our own areas.
Yes.
Okay, let me understand that. Who do they use right now?
Currently, they use the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department.
So, so what is this now? This is an extension of a current contract?
No, it is a renewal of an existing memorandum of understanding.
I understand. So then what is the second part? It says their train is also handled by the sheriff.
Yes. There's two different components of law enforcement for Metrolink. One is the base and non-base, or basic. The basic service is on board the train, and that's paid for fully by Metrolink in their budgetary process. They contract with the sheriff. In addition, the non-base services that the sheriff's department perform is the policing on the Los Angeles County right-of-ways. And that is contracted with Metrolink under an agreement with us that we pay them for those services.
So, but we've been paying for that up to now.
Yes.
And so, it's just a renewal of an MOU.
Yes.
But it could change because their contract is going to end in November.
With the Sheriff's Department.
The Sheriff's Department. So if they were to contract out now and get somebody else.
Yes. It could change the MOU just from a cost standpoint, depending upon what cost they negotiate the new contract for. But we would still... we would care if the amount is higher. We care if the amount of lower is lower because we save monies. But we would...
I don't understand. Do we have to use their contractor, I guess is what I'm saying.
No. We do not have to do it... we think it is feasible to do it at this time because of the timing. We looked at the option of rolling this contract into our own contract with the Sheriff's Department. However, we decided it would be best to wait until the Metrolink make a determination who their provider is going to be.
Can I just say that?
Yes.
I'm not so sure I truly understand it, but you know I've opposed the Sheriff's.
Yes.
Having these contracts forever, and even more so now, since we now have, I don't know if Mr. Finkelstein is here, I think we have 2,500 or more. What? How many vacancies do we have now?
I recall when we reached you last week, we were talking about 1,300, but I'm not clear.
No, you said you had 1,300, but under the funding that we gave you this year, it's up to 2,500. It's a lot of vacancies in the sheriff. And so I just want to understand. So right now, the 9.5 sheriffs that we use already in an existing contract.
Yes, they are in an existing contract. We're not adding more. No.
Because we already have a shortage as it is. I'm still opposing it.
But it raises a different question, though, in terms of if there were. I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor. The in terms of the shift to a if they were to shift to non-sheriff. Going back to our earlier discussion on overtime reimbursement. and reimbursement under the emergency powers, if as I remember, not the reimbursement from the federal government because of the overtime and the alerts has to be to a law enforcement organization, correct?
Yes.
So if they were to contract this to somebody who was not the sheriff's, for instance, and there were to be an incident and an alert that came from the federal government, overtime accrued, we would not be able to get reimbursement for that.
That's true. It's my understanding what MetroLink is, well, the individuals they have had discussions with are the Los Angeles Police Department and the Highway Patrol, all of whom would be qualify under Homeland Security.
Is there a way, I mean, are those the only three possibilities, or could they take this somewhere else?
I'm not aware where they would be able to take it without...
Because I'd just like to make, I mean, my concern, I want to make sure that we're still eligible to get reimbursement under...
Yes, we are.
But if they go a different direction in the future, I mean, I would like it to condition, at least from my perspective, that we still, that if they're going a direction where we can't get reimbursement, we get to revisit this.
We have that opportunity to revisit.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Ms., any other questions?
Down here, out of the committee.
As an observer.
As an observer.
Vicious in a meddler.
That's right. With also a vested interest in this case. I want to make sure that in terms of this, the Sheriff's Department policing of MetroLink, that goes beyond our county and all the other counties of MetroLink?
Yes.
So would there be another option, given that you've got other transit partnerships that could be established within this county and you've got unincorporated areas contributing officers due to the manpower shortages, is it a potential option that the rights of way in LA County would be sheriff and those in San Bernardino and other counties would be handled by other entities? Is that a...
In fact, you're right. There, as I mentioned, there are two components. The onboard security is provided by a Los Angeles County sheriff throughout the MetroLink operations, all five counties. For the right of way security, is only the county of Los Angeles that the Los Angeles County sheriff is providing security services. The other counties have to do their own individual contracts. In Orange County, it's the Orange County Sheriff's Department. I'm not sure about Ventura or San Bernardino or Riverside.
So you're saying Orange County uses Orange County Sheriff's on the trains?
No, not on the trains, on the right-of-way.
On the right-of-way, but on the trains it's still
The whole system is L.A. As Sheriff's Department, L.A. County Sheriff's Department.
Any other questions? Mr. Katz moves and Ms. Brooks seconds. Such will be the order. Ms. Molina will be recorded as a no vote on that item. Item 38.
Item 38 is SB 682 by Senator Simidian and is the Identity Information Protection Act of 2005. The bill is attempting to regulate the use of the so-called smart card technology, and there's some very legitimate privacy concerns with the development of this technology because the cards have a transmitter, and if there's personal information on these cards, then they could be remotely read.
Computer hacking or...
Or somebody with a remote reader who just walks by somebody that happens to have a card. And the basic concern is that if there's personal identifying information on the card, then this somebody could literally walk by somebody with a card and download their information. There are a number of qualifiers and definitions of the bill in the bill, and we wanted to take a work with author position on the bill because we're in the process of developing a smart card technology, and as that program develops, there could be some regulations in the bill and some issues in the bill that could impact the program. I think we look at this, I think, in two levels. At first, there's a very serious and legitimate privacy issue that we have to respect in the development of that program. There are some technical issues with the bill as far as security protocols that are technical in nature and may be an issue with the development of our program. So what we wanted to do is basically have a work with author position on the bill, work with the author in the development of the legislation so that we can develop a smart card program that provides a significant amount of utility to our riders but doesn't jeopardize any personal information that we may have at the agency.
But from a technological standpoint, there would be a way for us to not have the information on a card, but be able to have like a serial number, and then you could pull up that information just for our use, right?
Yes, for the serial number. So we do not have to have the individual's information.
If that's true, why don't you just do like what we said before, support with amendments? What would be the difference? Since it's likely.
We are seeking clarification on the actual technical attributes of the legislation and its impact to the smart card itself. We believe that the only information that will be acquired from such an hacker could potentially be the serial number, but we are getting verification for that. We have a technical oversight consultant, Booz Allen and Hamilton, who is investigating this on behalf of three of their clients. San Diego County is in the process of implementing a regional system. TransLink, as you know, is in their expanded phases of implementation, and Los Angeles County as well. And all three of our suppliers are the same Cubic Transportation Systems. So together with Booz Allen and Cubic, we are investigating this and ensuring the technical attributes and its impact are communicated to the maker.
Thank you. So why can't we put support with amendments?
That's fine. We can
why
do that.
Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
thank you very much.
We
got to go to these people and one thing we all get here. You know,
we want to work with the author, but we want to be in a position to have a legislation that works. And
support with amendments,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, so Ms. Burke moves, Mr. Katz seconds to approve all of the item. Number 38. General comment? Goldie Norton? Boy, you were hiding behind that. I didn't see this
Thank
whole
you,
time.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairman.
Norton. Welcome to you.
A couple months ago, we were advised by the board that they had in closed session agreed to pay the legal fees of our union in connection with the suit filed by the Department of Justice against the MTA regarding the discharge of an employee for religious reasons. And this was never a member of our union. We didn't even know of his existence, but the MTA succeeded in having us named as a co-defendant. As of now, those bills have not been paid, and the impression we get from your outside legal counsel is that payment is probably contingent upon our agreeing to sign off on an agreement reached by the MTA and the DOJ without our participation. We are not ready to do that because that agreement would have a very bad impact on the members of our union. At any rate, we're what probably could be called an impasse because I can assure you that there is no way we are going to agree to sign off on anything until our legal fees are paid. I don't want to sound cynical, but I can't help but being reminded of a statement by Samuel Goldman, a verbal agreement isn't worth the paper it's written on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Norton. Ms. Snowball?
Mr. Chairman, I'm aware of this. We are going to pay the bill. The board didn't authorize it. The bill came in a bit higher than we expected, so we're looking at it.
Can we move on then? Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Norton. With that, I guess we're going to close session, item 36. And if I could keep three of you for a moment, because we've lost a member. And just, no, she had to go.